What I would encounter when I was tutoring the SAT, I would interview kids. You know, I have a big SAT class, and I'd say, what's everybody going to school for? And I got the sense that they had been, more often than not, given a sort of buffet of careers and not asked to be conscious of the things that they were personally interested in. So if we rewind back to when my mother was graduating from high school, they told her she could be a nurse, a teacher, or a secretary. So maybe when I was doing this work, you know, 7 or 8 years ago, this had expanded for most people to 100 choices. But none of it was the building up from interest towards a career. So offering people that at that age, I think, is really important. I mean, for me, you know, my interest or my desire was always communication, performance, broadcasting, but I had no idea how I would wind up doing it. You know, I thought I'd be doing sports on television or something, but it was based on some kind of need or drive that was in me from a very early age.
The thing I will say, too, is that the vast majority of successful people I've been able to work with, and that was, you know, when I was working with the Praxis team, that was one of the best parts about my job, was I was in charge of business development. I got to meet a lot of successful entrepreneurs, a lot of investors, people like that. I got to talk to them. And the vast majority that I've talked to, the overwhelming majority, would emphasize that they weren't doing what we would call in the investment world a top-down analysis of their careers.
Right.
Looking at like, well, the market cap for data scientists is this, so I'm going to pursue data science. It was more they would pursue their interests, and there was this almost this emergent order in their careers that would come from it. Before I came here, you know, I had a 10 o'clock phone call talking to someone who this was exactly what happened for him in his career. He said, you know, what I do in my career, it wasn't a choice. It was a path that chose me.
Okay.
And I see that really often. So if I were talking to, you know, 16, 17-year-old Zach, and I told him, you know, like, oh, you know, all your interests and your career will come from that, I would have said, okay, great, buddy, but that's not actually something that I'm going to listen to. So if you find yourself skeptical of what you and I just said, my advice to you would be actually go talk to people who are happy and successful in their work, and they're growing in their work, and there's a ton of opportunity in front of them, and very few of them will tell you that it was something that they, you know, chose from this buffet of options.
Right.
Or that they followed their interests and their career kind of emerged from that.
Was a fool, waste my time, just searching my mind. But the more I find, the more I find the time to search. Stop and go a long way.
Welcome to the School Sucks Project, a podcast, YouTube channel, and online community dedicated to personal growth and intellectual self-defense.
We promote learning alternatives, home education, critical thinking, peaceful parenting, organization and productivity, and better communication strategies.
Please remember to visit schoolsucksproject.com to get comprehensive show notes, relevant links,
or to just leave comments.
Follow us on Twitter at @SchoolSucksShow. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, username School Sucks Podcast, and get involved in our Facebook group. Just search for School Sucks Project.
Happy Halloween, everybody. It's October 17th. I'm very pleased to welcome Zach Slaback back to the show for the sixth time. You go to schoolsucksproject.com, you enter Zach Slaback into the search field, and you are going to find treasures. This includes our first conversation, Building a Better Credential Than the College Degree, a valuable two-parter that we did earlier this year on Zach's Ambition Mapping Program, which we'll be talking about a little bit in the show today, and of course, the very heartwarming Won't You Be My Neighbor show, which was a review of and tremendous praise for the Mr. Rogers documentary, Won't You Be My Neighbor, and the city that set the scene for that great story, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. You heard of it? All right. So Zach is my neighbor. I had him over for coffee. He did bring his own coffee, but I don't find that offensive. You know, everybody has their own taste in coffee, you know, their own things they like to add to coffee. And things do, as you've noticed, get a little pumpkin-y this time of year. And I don't have anything like that. And that's what Zach was into. So I'm actually glad that he showed up with his own hot cup. His website is zachslabeck.com. His goal with that project is to help ambitious young people get ahead in their careers. And that is the focus of the conversation you're about to hear. It's based on a blog article that Zach wrote called How a High School Student Can Get Ahead in Their Career. So we're going to talk about the importance of developing an interest, learning about that interest and how to learn about that interest, who to connect with, how to build upon that interest, how to make better connections based on that building, and how to send signals out into the world to attract the right people to help you keep moving forward and upward. So maybe today's show is not applicable to you personally. I know we can't all be Alex Bell circa 2009 here, but maybe you're a parent with a teenager in school or in some home education situation. Maybe you've got a niece or a nephew like I do. Maybe you're a teacher or a mentor. All of you can take something away from this conversation. I really appreciate Zach joining me. For a man in his mid-20s, he has certainly accrued a lot of wisdom, and he's doing a great job of sharing it with the young people who need it. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Thank you so much to everybody who supports us through the AV Club and through Patreon. You want to learn more about that? You can go to schoolsucksproject.com/AV to see all of the support options. I promise there's one that you are going to love. And that is it. Here's my conversation with Zach Slabeck. Zach Slabeck, welcome to the Studio of Champions.
In the city of champions, Brett.
Well, yeah. I mean, what other names will we debate?
The Paris of Appalachia, the jewel of the Rust Belt, Blitzburg. Pittsburgh, fantastic city, fantastic, wonderful city. I'm sitting here, you've got a panoramic shot of the city over your shoulder, and it's just one of our beautiful days here.
Well, how's the neighborhood for you? We're both pretty settled in here at this point.
This was an 8-minute walk to your studio.
Oh, that's awesome.
It was an 8-minute walk. It's great. I really enjoy being here.
Mm-hmm. And this place just continues to amaze me.
We just need our own Fred Rogers.
We've got one.
Are you or Fred Rogers?
No, he's running around town.
Oh, you mean, no, didn't he leave? Oh, he leaves next Saturday.
Hanks?
Yeah, Hanks.
Yeah. Have there been sightings?
There have been sightings.
Yeah.
I've been following Twitter, people posting like, oh, here's a picture of Tom Hanks waving at me from an SUV downtown. I'm so excited my life is made.
His Instagram is an absolute delight, by the way. He just takes pictures of discarded gloves on city streets.
That's weird.
And writes strange captions about them.
So you have to understand that if his artistic talent had not been noticed, he'd be the guy walking around looking at discarded gloves on city streets, probably either as a day laborer or as homeless.
Mm. Well, lucky for him.
Yeah.
Watch The Money Pit, by the way, the other night. That film is timeless, especially for anyone who's ever purchased a home. Have you seen The Money Pit?
No, I have not. Hence the black stare.
You're young. The Money Pit, Tom Hanks, 30 years old in this movie. It is a magical film. He and Shelley Long, they buy a house, this old mansion. And this was before Tom Hanks was a serious actor. It came out in 1986.
Wow.
It is one of the funniest movies. Highly recommended, The Money Pit. So you're here today to talk to high school students. And I think usually the high school students you're talking to are fairly ambitious, right? I mean, like, how are high school age people finding your blog, zachslabeck.com?
It's almost always through either a parent, some sort of older mentor, or like a teacher, right?
Yeah.
You know, I'm not like going into schools or anything like that. I used to, but, you know, I'd find a lot of the students I'm talking to don't love school qua school. They love things that they are good at and they enjoy winning, right? And they're very good at winning the game of school. So like for me personally growing up, this is how I was. I didn't enjoy school per se, but I enjoyed things that I was good at and that I could win.
Right.
And that was an environment where I could do that. So a lot of the students I interact with are similar. They are thinking about their careers, which a lot of high schoolers aren't. They're thinking about the context in which they're going to go to college, if they're going to go to college.
Right.
Which again, a lot of high schoolers aren't. They're thinking about their lives in the context of their lives and not in the context of the moment right now.
And the school is seen as a means, like understood as a means to an
end. Oh, yeah. At least in my case, it was like, look, if I do well at this game, they'll leave me alone and I can go do the other stuff I want to do.
I was just curious because, you know, I realized right from the beginning, I was naive in the beginning and I didn't even probably really consider this, but high school students are kind of difficult to reach through most online media. I mean, YouTube is a sure thing.
I will tell you right now, I've been fortunate to be working more in like the technology and startup scene last couple of years. It is not unusual for me to get referred over to somebody who is trying to build an ed tech company, an education technology company, usually through like one of the events I work at or that I speak at or something. And 9 times out of 10, I will tell you that those ed tech companies will probably fail.
Right.
Because they focus on one of two demographics that are notoriously difficult to sell to. One is high school students.
Yeah.
Like there's just gatekeepers everywhere. We infantilize them to no end. They can't make any decisions themselves. A lot of college students can't make decisions themselves. They have to run them by their parents. Like, do you really want to be going into a complex sale for like a $50 product? I don't think so.
Yeah.
Or they're selling to teachers.
A lot of attention at that age is also sucked up by meaningless attention-grabbing things.
It's like, maybe you will be able to get in front of them.
Yeah.
That's a big hurdle in the first place. Then actually getting them to buy into something is a whole nother hurdle. So it's like, look, if that's who you want to sell to, if that's who you want your product to be, great. Some people can do it really well. It's just probably not the best vertical for you to go after.
Right. And, you know, most of my experience was with like at-risk high school kids. So that was even a totally...
It's even harder.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was tough. I mean, when I was doing that job, the Chappelle Show had just come out on television. So every day was just Chappelle Show quotes all day. And I had to redirect from that. But I saw, and even though that show was brilliant, how those, like, I thought I was a cool young teacher who had a lot of interesting educational things to show. But just like, I use the Chappelle Show as an example, even though it's certainly not the most malicious thing out there now or then, of something drawing attention away, right? Something that is absolutely irresistible to people that age. And now, that has been multiplied. You know, we're talking 2006. That's been multiplied by a thousand.
You not only have these things that are drawing your general attention away, like,
right,
like a television show or a video game, but you have things that are drawing focus ability away.
Oh, yeah.
Cal Newport's really good on this stuff. He wrote his book, Deep Work, mostly on this topic. Focus is something you have to train. It is a skill. And just like any skill, it can be untrained as well. If you want to be very bad at focusing on things, spend your time in front of the things that, you know, massive corporations employ thousands of PhDs in psychology and cognitive science and pay them hundreds of thousands of dollars to design focus killers like social media. Like, I sound like such a crotchety old man when I talk about this kind of stuff, but there are large teams of very well-paid professionals whose job it is to steal your attention and deplete your focus.
Right.
And I can't imagine, like, I grew up, you know, in the aughts, in the aughts of the 2000s. So, like, Facebook was something that really came into being towards the end of my high school years.
Right.
But I can't imagine being in front of as many focus and attention grabbers today as a child.
Right.
I spent the other night around a couple of younger children as part of, like, a family thing. And I know that when I was a kid, you know, I was playing on my Game Boy and like I wanted to go play on the PlayStation and things like that. But there were at least some times when I didn't have access to that.
Yeah.
Right? Where I would have to go 20 minutes without having access to a screen. That just doesn't exist anymore.
No. And I was, you know, coming up at a time like in the 80s and 90s where I remember before any of that existed. Right.
I don't.
Just being outside, you know, just being out in the woods, pretending to be somebody else or, you know, having some kind of fun adventure on a bike. And then Nintendo came, NES came, and Game Boy came, and we were completely unprepared for that, obviously.
Now, it is important to say, too, there are a lot of benefits to different games and to different engagement platforms like that.
I think the problem was is that adults weren't ready to figure out how to guide people through that attention sucking, right? Mm-hmm. So it's new, it's novel, and it has to be part of a balanced existence for a young person. But I remember
and parenting's hard. You know, your kids are wearing you down. You've got a long day at work. You come home. You just kind of want them to. You want them to be happy, right? I don't want to paint the super cynical picture of like you just want to shut them up.
Right, sure.
You want them to be happy. They enjoy the PlayStation or the Sega or the NES. Let them play it for a little while. And
right.
You get a little bit of time to yourself.
Yeah. So the big picture here is that it's difficult to get to these kids with like constructive and valuable information.
Yeah.
And – you know, we both had this interaction yesterday with Alex Bell. He was on my podcast, and then he went right to your house after that. You guys hung out for a bit. He discovered my show when he was 16 years old.
Yeah.
He was exactly the teenager I was looking for. So that's a great story, and we've become good friends. And
but he discovered your show through his dad.
Exactly. Right. So I had – I mean, what I really should have done back then is started a YouTube channel, and I didn't do that. Like, no high school kid was searching – you know, iTunes for political podcasts. So I wound up having an adult audience, and then maybe lots of adults pass that on to their children. I mean, that's pretty typical how that works. But there's such a gold mine for this kind of person who's looking for some other way to not just follow the tracks that have been laid out. I'm wondering how much thought you would put into helping people discover that. But getting to teachers, making connections, obviously, with teachers and other adults who have the same interests as you, especially if they have access or they're in positions of, you know, authority as teachers, educators, mentors, I guess that would be one path getting this stuff into the minds of young people.
When you can think about personal networking and sales, there are two types of people that you want to connect with, depending on who you want to reach, right? Who you want to reach will define everything you want to go after. But if you want to reach people who are behind gatekeepers, you want to connect with the gatekeepers.
Right.
You don't want to try to like sidestep the gatekeepers, because that's just not going to work. It's not sustainable. So make friends with the gatekeepers. And if those are gatekeepers that your audience respects, which a lot of teachers aren't respected, and I'm honestly not trying to reach most high school students.
Right.
Do I think most high school students could benefit from the stuff that I've written about, the stuff that I've experienced, and the stuff that I've taught? Absolutely. But if they're not going to listen, if they're not in a position to listen, it's like, you know, one of the people I've learned from gives this example with personal finance, that he would try to like shake his friends down in college and tell them like, you need to set up a Roth IRA.
Right. Yeah.
And they're not going to do it if they're not actually interested in it in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I'm not trying to reach all high schoolers. I'm trying to reach those who they're thinking seriously about their career, and they know that there's more to that than just following certain steps.
Right. Absolutely. And what we're going to talk about today is some ways that these people can position themselves ahead of many slightly older young adults who are languishing in four-year degree programs.
Oh, absolutely.
Right?
I mean, there are ways that a high school student at 16, 17 years old, and I know this because I experienced it, and I've taught it, and I've seen it, that a 16, 17-year-old can get ahead of somebody who is 23, 24 years old, coming out of college, coming out of their grad school program.
Well, that's what we're going to go into detail about today. I mean, and you know, the other thing too, a friend of mine runs a large company, collections company, and he has said he doesn't manage the hiring, but obviously he advises the hiring managers and says, I don't even want to deal with college students anymore or college graduates anymore because of entitlement. And that was certainly a problem for me when I was walking around with a bachelor's degree in communications in 2001, expecting that it meant not even an entry-level job. You know, and being incredibly discouraged, trying to find jobs at radio stations, ironically, to find some path to being on the air or some path to being in front of a microphone. Back then, it was incredibly – it was a real wake-up call that didn't mean anything. But I remember sort of shooting myself in the foot with this sense of entitlement, even this sort of faux intellectual superiority that I left a four-year degree program at a average college with. So that's an extra challenge for those people that provides an opportunity for these younger people, I think, to get around. And that's just the reality, I think, of higher education.
You know, one of the things that I will constantly beat the drum on, and this is really to anybody under the age of like 30, but especially to people under the age of like 24. If you approach a busy older person, whether that's an employer or an expert or somebody who is doing something like what you're doing, right?
Right.
A content creator of some kind. And you show them a modicum of conscientiousness and sincere interest in what they are doing, the fact that you are young is probably not going to work against you. It's probably going to be to your benefit.
Absolutely.
Because yeah. I can tell you, so like my very first mentor was a gentleman named Josh Blackman.
Mm-hmm.
And Josh, for any of your listeners who are interested in like constitutional law or even like the 3D printed guns case recently with Cody Wilson, Josh mm-hmm. was brought into the news for that. He's one of the country's leading constitutional law scholars. At the time, he was just a law clerk in Johnstown, Pennsylvania, about 20 minutes from where I was growing up.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that I was young, I was a high schooler, and I took an interest in what this law clerk was doing. I don't know. He's probably like 26, I don't know, right out of law school, right? That worked to my benefit. And then Josh was able to teach me certain things that I was able to write about, go a little bit deeper in. And just by pursuing my interest, you know, two or three books deep, I was able to learn more about certain topics than a lot of college graduates had. And then if I went to like, say, a seminar
yeah.
or a day-long event or just a lecture and I was talking to people afterwards, you know, the question would ultimately come up, you know, like, oh, how, you know, are you a freshman, sophomore?
Right.
And like in college. You're like, oh, well, you know, I'm a junior in high school. And they'd look floored. And that actually made it easier to connect with them. It actually made it easier to stay in contact with them.
Yeah.
Because they were impressed. Right. And I'll be honest, like compared to what I know now, I knew nothing.
Right.
But the fact that I went out of my way to try to learn things, that I made time in my schedule and that I wasn't like, you know, off in a cornfield getting drunk on the weekend. I was driving down to DC to sit in on the seminar. That signaled something where it's like, okay, I want to keep my eyes on this person.
Yeah.
And I can tell you now that I'm in the position where like I can get people jobs. I work directly with a lot of people. I employ some people myself. Like when I see a high schooler that's like that, even if I can't give them a job right now, I want to keep my eyes on them.
It's exciting.
Yeah.
Right. And I think there's another benefit to taking that stance at that age as well. One of the things that's particularly paralyzing from people, it probably starts affecting us at age 9 or 10 and goes up to age 100, is fear of failure, right?
You totally failed in production.
Well, now I'll leave it in that there's a joke that goes with it. Fear of failure. I'm not suggesting that young people go out looking for situations where there's leeway or there's an abundance of forgiveness for incompetence. But if you're a young person trying to assert yourself or express an interest in a new field and you're still 16 or 17 years old, you probably have some leeway, and that can take away from that fear of failure. It might create an opportunity, especially if you're still living from home, to take some bold risks, to take some chances, maybe entrepreneurially.
Well, I mean, the reality is, too, a lot of people, especially going back to our segue into this conversation, people freak out about, you know, what will it look like if I fail, or what if it, you know, what if people see through me, like they get like an imposter syndrome.
Yeah, exactly.
The reality is people don't care about you. And that's actually right. A good thing, right? A lot of people, they will forget very quickly and they'll forgive fairly quickly as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's worth, especially in the beginning of your career when the costs are relatively low, try things. Go out, work directly under people, do some grunt work that at 16, 17 years old is actually pretty exciting to do.
Mm-hmm.
That at like 23, 24, you're like, I have to do this. I have to, you know, filter through case law papers.
That was it. That was the really like the job offers that were presented to me. You know,
yeah,
at 21
years
old,
17, that's exciting.
Oh yeah. I mean, that's an amazing difference, right? When I was 16 years old, I was in a room the size of my bedroom closet with two old dudes who smoked cigarettes and no windows. And we were making donuts at an apple orchard, and it was fine. 5 years after this, it was an outrage that I couldn't have an on-air position at a radio station.
Well, and a big part of this is expectations.
Right? That's it.
And I don't mean that as a like self-helpy kind of, you know, word bit.
Yeah.
People get frustrated based on their expectations.
Yeah.
Right? You feel resentment towards somebody when they violate your expectations you held of them.
Mm-hmm.
You feel guilt towards yourself when you violate your own expectations that you hold.
Sure.
And you feel indignation when you see other people violating your expectations that you hold about. Like I was walking here, right? Just got a good little example. I was mm-hmm. walking here. And, you know, Pittsburgh doesn't have a lot of sidewalks.
Right.
But our neighborhood actually has some really nice sidewalks.
Yep.
I'm walking and I get to like four houses down from yours and the sidewalk's completely destroyed and it's just overgrown. And there's this big dog at the top of the hill that's just barking at me. And I feel this pinch of kind of annoyance at your neighbor for not maintaining a sidewalk.
Yeah.
Because there's this expectation everyone else has maintained their sidewalk,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Or their landlords have maintained their sidewalk. But this person didn't. And – for yourself as well. You hold these expectations about, I'm going to go into the workforce. I'm going to go and get a certain kind of job. And these expectations come from a number of different places. They come from your guidance counselors. They come from your high school teachers. They come from your parents. They come from the popular mass media. And you get into the real world and there's a misalignment of these expectations.
Right.
And at first, it's easy to feel pissed off.
Yeah.
So I actually sympathize with people when they feel a little irritated.
At a perfect time in life to feel pissed off too.
Yeah.
I think.
You can use some of that annoyance to go find something else and to motivate yourself forward.
Well, I just mean age-wise. Like, there's lots of capitalization on the angsty teen, adult. So it's like an age-appropriate time for that as well.
If you're like a 50-year-old guy and you're annoyed about something like that, that's kind of unbecoming.
Sure. Yeah. There's lots of support for that at that age too.
So no, if you're a young person, the thing I recommend that you do is – and I used to hesitate using this term because it throws a lot of weirdness into people's minds, but I'm going to use it and I'm going to reclaim it. I'm going to stake my flag down. And that's, you need to build out your own personal brand.
Mm-hmm.
And a personal brand doesn't need to be you selling something. You know, Alex Bell and I were talking yesterday about this and he said, yeah, you know, there are a lot of people selling yourself. And it's like, okay, yeah, sure. There are a lot of people out there. There are a lot of, you know, gurus and a lot of charlatans.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, the reason why somebody goes and gets any kind of credentials is because it signals certain things about them.
Right.
It signals certain traits, characteristics, skills, knowledge, and experience. You can build something that signals a lot of those yourself and you can tailor it yourself.
Right.
You can get the credentials on top of that if you want.
Right.
And for certain career tracks, go do that. That's probably going to be the best investment of your time and energy.
But don't use it to fill in that whole space.
Right.
Yeah.
Don't use it as something to replace building out this signaling tool, which is your personal brand, use it as something on top of that.
Right. And I don't know how it was for you when you were going through this process like 7 years ago. But for me, you know, 20 years ago, there was obviously that whole space was filled with the credential.
Yeah.
There was nothing else.
Yep.
So.
Yeah. I mean, this is one of the things where it's like today it has never been easier to go to namecheap.com. Buy your first name, lastname.com for like $10.96.
Mm-hmm.
Spin up a WordPress site for like another $8 a year or $8 a month, whatever it is, and build your own website.
Right.
That on that website, you can say who you are, what you do, what you have done, what your experience is, the value you've actually created, which when you're, you know, 16, 17 years old, there's not going to be a lot there. And that's fine. And again, people understand that. And then also to signal your competence through, you know, a blog or podcast or a vlog, whatever it is.
Sure.
Some form of content, your preferred form of content. For me, I'm a writer, you know, so that's writing. And writing is a pretty easy and accessible way to get down this route. But it has never, literally never been easier to do something like this.
Mm-hmm.
So it's one of these things that I almost view as a career insurance policy.
Yeah, let's go into detail on that. And if for those of you who are listening at home, there is a blog article that Zach wrote about this, How to Get Ahead, How High School Students Can Get Ahead, I think is the name. I'll definitely link it.
Something like that, How High School Students Can Get Ahead in Their Careers.
It'll be linked in the show notes if you want a list to look at. But we can go one by one and talk about the benefits of each. The first one we've just entered into, starting a personal website. Wow. You are still in high school.
Yeah.
And you, in a separate blog piece, talked about, you know, this is a place where you can build a portfolio, mm-hmm. like the benefits of this. This is a place where you can, to some degree, to some responsible and maybe measured degree, showcase personality, using it as a canvas for creation and as a kind of insurance, as you just mentioned. So let's talk a little bit about each one of those.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is something, again, I can't remember the year I first started ZachSlayback.com. It's gone through a couple different hosts. It's gone through a couple different services, so I can't even find the original version of the site. Probably good. but again, that's the point. Like, no one would care if I did find like the 2009 version of ZachSlayback.com, right? It's one of these things that's ridiculously easy for people to do. They get really overwhelmed by it because they start looking at all the steps involved. But
yes.
What you have to do is you just need to think – you start with what is the finished product you want to have in mind. And it should just be a simple website that has what I call a positioning statement. Businesses have positioning statements. People should have positioning statements as well that says who you are, what you do, and for whom you do it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Again, when you're in high school, that's a little – bit on the debatable side. But as you get older, you can really fill that in. You can really hone it. You can make it a lot more targeted.
You can start with I'm so-and-so and I'm interested in blank.
Yeah, and I write about these topics.
Exactly.
I'm interested in these topics. Right.
Yeah.
And then as you get experience, you can say something like I'm so-and-so and I help these kinds of companies with this kind of problem.
Right.
Right. And this is something that I really want to preface this. I should have said this at the beginning of the conversation. No matter how old you are, what we're about to go into is beneficial for you and your career.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just writing this specific piece, this specific blog post, from the perspective of answering a question that a high school student who attended a Foundation for a fee seminar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Foundation for Economics Education. I actually have it. I can read it really quickly.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm really interested in your – so he went to his first fee session this summer. Was it he?
Yeah, it was he.
He said, I'm really interested in your work in the area of helping others reach their goals of building high opportunity careers. I have a long way to go, but I think I can use a lot of your ideas to reach my college goals and beyond. It is my intent to study in Japan and have a career that combines finance with environmentally forward-thinking innovation. It's not mainstream, but it is needed, and I am certain it can be groundbreaking. Just wanted to drop you a line and say I'm looking forward to more of your articles and posts.
Yeah. So great, great message. I was happy to receive it. You know, he's relatively young, so he'll get a better idea of what, you know, Japan finance and environmentally forward thinking means, because a lot of that's kind of like jargony.
Yeah.
Wordy. But again, he'll get a better idea of what all that means as he gets experience.
Right.
But the way for him as a high schooler to get experience, let's start from the conclusion of getting that kind of experience and work backwards.
Right.
Well, you need to meet the right people. Well, how do you meet the right people? Well, you're probably going to meet them at certain kinds of events or through certain kinds of introductions with some kind of context that sets the scene for why they want to meet you. Well, how are you going to set that context? Well, you're going to set that context through learning certain things that set you apart from other people and signaling that you know those things, you have that knowledge, and you have positive traits and skills that they're looking for.
Right.
Well, how do you acquire that? Okay. Then we can take a further step back and talk about things like building out your personal website, building out your portfolio, and finding a number of people that you can learn from.
Right, which in a way is a motivation. To have a way to broadcast what you're learning is a very exciting thing.
Yeah.
It's very exciting at all ages.
Yeah.
You know, if you're into this. But obviously we've seen young children do it. But I remember the next most intense period of learning was college. And I was very excited about communicating to other people, maybe not with the best communication strategies at the time, all of the things that I was learning. The discovery of the philosophy of liberty, again, many years later, was another one of these times where I just could not shut up.
Do you mean to tell me that waving a sign that says Ron Paul 2004 doesn't persuade people?
It's certainly not. But
I just find the Ron Paul sine waves so funny.
Sine wave would not have pacified me. That's okay. I needed more than that. I needed to corner like Democrats and Republicans and give them long lectures right out of For New Liberty by Murray Rothbard. That was more my style.
There we go.
Chasing people out of a room, basically. That was me. That was me at the time I started this show. This show was like really valuable, you know, to have an outlet, because otherwise I probably would have ruined.
Well, and this is one of the things you know, you've talked about and a number of people talk about, but the different levels of competency, the different levels of knowledge. And one of the highest levels is being able to teach something coherently.
Yeah.
And it's worth practicing the skill of teaching to other people too. That itself is a skill.
Exactly.
And you can start that by just writing about whatever you're learning or applying what you're learning to certain contexts.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So you're getting a satisfaction of needs and that you want to communicate these things. You're excited about communicating these things, but you're also solidifying your knowledge, as you said, by expressing to somebody else.
So we start with the conclusion in mind and we start working backwards and we start breaking down what are the things you're going to need to do in order to reach that conclusion. That conclusion can be the thing that motivates you, because there's going to be a lot of steps.
Right.
And it's going to take some time. But we want to break it down into easily addressable action steps that you can take.
Sure.
My approach, you know, we talked about this with like the ambition mapping episode, the find your focus episode. But my approach in general is whatever you're trying to approach and build a plan for, you want to build it back to the point where as soon as you are done building that plan, there is some action you can take.
Exactly.
For most people, what I encourage them when they're reading my articles is go to namecheap.com and buy firstnamelastname.com.
Mm-hmm.
Not actually firstnamelastname.com, but you're like brettvinod.com or
sexlayback.com.
And that's there. You've done one thing. You can check one thing off your list. Now you own that URL. No one else can take that URL. And you can actually do something with it, right? So go buy that, and then you spin up your website, right? There's a number of steps involved with that, but you know, we've got this wonderful learning mechanism called Google and YouTube. Mm-hmm. You can look up what's actually involved in building out that website.
And if you're still recommending WordPress for this, are you?
Yes.
Okay. Then that's the, I mean, you talk about a volume of tutorials. You can't do better than WordPress.
Yeah. There's a temptation to use things like Weebly or Squarespace that are a little bit more accessible.
Yeah.
But there are a number of reasons that I recommend starting and probably staying, unless you're very technologically advanced with these things, on WordPress. And those two big reasons are, three big reasons. One is there's so many tutorials out there for WordPress.
Yep. Like
you want to do literally anything, there's a tutorial somewhere on it.
Right.
There are a ton of plugins for it. So you can build out a ton of different functionality on WordPress. Some ridiculous chunk of the web is based on WordPress. And you go on some of these websites, like I think CNN.com is an example of this. It doesn't look like WordPress. It doesn't look like a WordPress blog, but that's just how versatile WordPress is. And then third, and this is actually really important, is WordPress is open source. So there's no company that can go out of business behind it, right?
Right.
Like if Squarespace goes out of business, if you've got a Squarespace website, you're SOL.
Mm-hmm.
If Weebly goes out of business and you're on a Weebly website, you're SOL. If, you know, there is a WordPress.com, but if like that company goes out of business, like that's not the WordPress, you know, open source library. Who cares?
Right.
Right. So it's very resilient to any kind of changes out there. So
and you also, the good thing about WordPress too is that it's always adapting and changing and being updated. So one of the stumbling blocks for a lot of people, myself included in the past, when we first switched to WordPress from Ruby on Rails in 2012, I think we started working on this project. It doesn't matter if you have great design skills or not, right? You're building a foundation of content, and you can always improve those skills. You can always bring in – there's so many people who do development and design for this very, very cheap. Any problem I've ever had or any need I've ever had for my website, somebody else had a blog about it, a YouTube video about it, a plugin for it. So all you're doing initially without any design skill, without any web development experience – is building a foundation of content, following some basic rules.
Even in 2018, 2019, the bar is pretty low in the expectation that people want and they expect on a blog site is pretty low. Like go back to the early and mid-2000s and look at some of the early blogs. They look terrible.
Sure.
But these are blogs that have built multi-million dollar businesses in many cases or personal brands that have allowed people to do pretty much whatever they want with their careers.
Mm-hmm.
So don't worry about design. You know, my original ZachSlayback.com, awful, right? Even after on the redesign that I eventually had done that one of your past guests, Derek McGill, helped me build out, still not great, but it was better than the last one. And then the current version that I have on, somebody else who's in my network helped me build it out, Dylan Langlois. I don't know anything about building out WordPress personally.
Mm-hmm.
I can build a very simple website that has all the elements that I'm talking about here, and that's all I need to do. If you get to the point where you want to make it look pretty and you're actually trying to run like a business through your personal brand, which is the point that I'm at now, then you work with somebody else.
Right.
But don't start with, you know, somebody who's got 10 years of a head start with you as your like measuring point.
Right. Exactly.
You're at year zero. Compare other people year zero to yourself. That's it.
Yeah. And it's always changeable, updatable as you go.
Yep.
But establishing like what we talk about is a lot of businesses have brochure websites, right? Which is kind of what we're transitioning School Sucks away from, where it's like, hi, I'm this website. This is what we are. And not so much about welcome to this website. Here's what we can do for you,
which is
more business oriented. But for the personal brand, you are making basically a brochure for yourself. So there's lots of these more deeper design and development things you don't need to worry about, at least initially.
Yes and no. I think I understand what you're saying, but I do actually want to challenge people to think of themselves with what they signal on that website in the same way that a company that is really effective at letting their potential clients know what they can do for them is doing. So,
and I think that's, what did you call that? A foundation, the thing that's at the top of like
positioning statement.
Right. Okay.
So you'll find a lot of companies, great example of this. This is all copywriting stuff, right?
Yeah.
And there's a ton of different ways you can get into copywriting. There are a ton of different books out there. You know, I've read a couple of the main books on this, but really for me, it was a lot of online courses. But a great example of how you can tell if somebody's actually studied copywriting is you look at their about page, whether it's their personal website or it's their company website. A company website is like This company was founded in 2004, and we facilitate synergistic relationships with our trusted business clients.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, right. It's business jargon.
Yeah,
no one actually speaks in those words.
Right.
Right? On a personal side, it's an about page that reads like a Wikipedia article.
Right.
It's like, okay, if I'm hosting you as a speaker at a conference, I do want to see that biography. But if I'm somebody who is clicking on your website and I don't know anything about you, that's not what I want to learn about. I want to learn about, you know, what are you interested in? What can you do for other people? Why are you interested in those things, right? Mm-hmm. I don't want the Wikipedia article. The positioning statement is a much more concise version of something like this. And its competitors that you end up finding on a lot of websites are things like value statements and mission statements.
Mm-hmm.
Value statements, I think, are the worst. There are these obscure like adjectives or nouns that would be like innovative, value-driven, charismatic. I'll see these on personal brand sites a lot of the time. I'm like, what? Good words, right? Like, why are you just throwing out good adjectives about yourself to me?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to believe those unless you show me evidence of that.
Right.
And it's not particularly helpful. Like, you are charismatic for whom? You're values-driven about what?
Right.
You're innovative. Give me examples, right? Mission statement, you know, most people are familiar with mission statements. Positioning statement, on the other hand, is something like X helps Y achieve Z through A, B, and C,
mm-hmm.
right? So I help high growth SaaS startups scale their enterprise sales through building referral programs, right? Is an example of somebody who is a sales professional who might have that on their website.
Right. So it's kind of it's drilling down a step more specific. Like if we start at vision, which mm-hmm. is like just a usually a why for the creator, maybe mission involves a little bit of the for who and how, but this is like really going into detail on the
how. And the goal for this is
– in a very small amount of words, I mean.
The goal for this with the positioning statement is when somebody visits your website, they should be able to tell whether or not that site is for them.
Exactly.
And if the answer is no, you want them to leave, right?
Yes.
You don't want them on the site.
Scram. Right? Yeah.
If the answer is yes, then you want them to say, yes, that's me. That is me,
mm-hmm.
right? So you want to use words they would use to describe themselves, words they would use to describe their problems and the solutions that they're looking for. If you're just starting out, though, again, if you're 16 years old, you're listening to this thing to yourself, where do I start? Start with saying, you know, I am this person and I'm interested in these topics.
Right.
That's enough. Like,
right.
I think my original positioning statement on my website was something like, I'm Zach Slayback and I'm interested in topics relating to constitutional law and philosophy.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I wrote about those topics. Sometimes the writing prompts were, letters to the editor that I wrote in my hometown that they graciously published. Sometimes they were answers to things like Quora questions. That's something I encourage people to do. Go to Quora.com and answer questions that you know the answers to and then republish those answers on your website.
Right.
And sometimes they were even like school assignments if I thought that they were interesting. Like as a function of what I was interested in school, the extracurriculars that I was involved in, and the mentor that I was able to pick up in Josh, a lot of what I wrote about ended up being topics relating to like constitutional law. Right.
Right.
Which also gave me a great current events angle I was able to take. So I was able to write about, you know, this specific case has gone in front of the Supreme Court. What are some of the considerations that we might want to take? Now, that's a really advanced example for like a 16-year-old.
Yeah.
But I'm a nerd. So
right, right.
Like that was something I enjoyed writing about. So I didn't have to start with this whole like, oh, I need to have like a content marketing strategy in mind. No, just start writing.
Mm-hmm.
That's all you need at the beginning. You will start tailoring your brand as you gain more experience and you gain specific skills and knowledge. Like even for me, if I went back 2 or 3 years ago, my personal brand was much more unfocused than it is today.
So we don't want somebody to hit a wall here on, you know, even if it's just a self-defeating idea that they could overcome at that age. I hate writing. Right.
Mm-hmm.
There's certainly other means of expression. We're using one mm-hmm. right yeah. now. So have you given people any guidance on like, is YouTube unprofessional
no.
or okay?
A lot of people have vlogs on YouTube. YouTube's great. YouTube podcasting, you know, we could walk through the step by steps to like start a very simple like podcast hosted on
it's
SoundCloud, right?
Easy it's in the
really
beginning.
Easy.
Yeah.
It can get costly and it can get time consuming, but it's easy at first and it's a great entry point.
Right.
if somebody says they hate writing, you know, my advice tends to be twofold. One is find a medium you do like and start creating there.
Right.
If that is YouTube, do it on YouTube. Like literally some vlogs nowadays are just people sitting in front of their webcams. Now, the people who do it well, they tend to have the webcams at a certain angle, like above their nose. So it's not like looking up into your nose.
Exactly. Thank you for saying that.
They have certain lighting right behind it, but that lighting can be as simple as a lamp. Right.
Right.
And start talking about topics that you're interested on there. Right. If it's audio, start podcasting. Start recording things with your friends. The other thing I tell people though is like, you don't hate writing. You hate the writing that you've been forced to do so far.
That is well said. Yep.
Learn to at least approach writing so that it's not intimidating to you, because it is the most versatile form of content creation.
Mm-hmm.
One of the big advantages to writing, like my personal brand has been able to drive me tens of thousands of dollars in speaking engagements.
Mm-hmm.
I've been very fortunate for that, and I'm grateful that that has happened. But the funny thing has been, all of those speaking engagements, none of them have come from podcast interviews, and none of them have come from YouTube videos. They've all come from articles. Why is that? Well, if I talk about something in an article, that gets indexed on Google.
SEO.
The content of what we're talking about here, as of right now, where Google's technology is, and I think it's only about 2 years away from where it will be able to index the actual content of what we're talking about, it can't index that. It can only index what's in your post.
I've had a team working on this problem for 6 months now, trying to extract the content from all of these podcasts. We have over 600 podcasts, you know, over 300 extra bonus shows, and then all these videos, and Google can't find, and there's, you know, I'm going to say it, there's some gold in there, mm-hmm. and Google can't find it.
Yeah.
So we've been in the process of extracting it and turning it into, you know, first of all, like overviews for sections or topics on the website, but then also blog articles that would be easier for people to find based on keyword searches.
One of the things I do, and this is a bit more advanced for somebody who, you know, maybe they're already giving talks or they're going on podcasts or they've got a vlog or whatever it is when I give a talk or I'm on a podcast, I don't always get to do this based on whatever my, you know, my workflow is like at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I try to write up a longer form blog post that covers the content of the podcast episode.
Right.
I put the podcast episode, I embed it at the very top. I tell people listen to it, but here's what I covered. The reason I do that isn't necessarily to tell people don't listen to the podcast, but it's really because I want Google to see it and I want Google to drive qualified traffic to my site.
And if somebody starts a podcast and or a vlog and they haven't done this, the approach to take is not to say, well, I have to now do this for everything that I put in a video. I think you have to decide what the most important things are and go after those.
It's important. In this discussion, we're really talking at three levels.
Yeah.
We're talking at the beginner level, the moderate level, and the advanced level.
Right.
Like where you and I are personally, we're at advanced levels. And we can talk about that all day.
Sure, right.
But we can also talk about the intermediate level.
Mm-hmm.
And we can talk about the easy level. When you are just getting started, the most important thing you can do is create.
Yeah,
I agree. This is one of the things that I'm very grateful to one of my later mentors, Isaac Morehouse, was able to teach me to do is like just write once a day for 30 days.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you publish it or not, try to publish it, but just write. Now, I generally encourage people don't write every day and publish every day as your brand becomes a little bit more established. This is an intermediate thing because if you're publishing every day, what quality is your content?
Right, right.
But at first, get in the habit, build the habit of content creation, whatever that looks like for you. Like literally, if it's you want to write haikus.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I would even say too that as you're trying to get your feet wet with this, podcasting is a really friendly medium. Like if you are hesitant to write and you want to express and you're trying to make a choice between podcast and video, like going with podcasting eliminates a whole bunch of concerns that video doesn't have.
When I was in high school, I really wish podcasting were as easy as it is today.
Oh yeah.
There were a number of times, I've thought about this recently. There were a number of times where I thought to myself, I would love to have sat down with a couple of my friends and talked about this topic and published it up to iTunes. It was a lot more complicated back then.
Yeah.
It's really easy today.
Absolutely. And things can become podcasts almost immediately. As soon as they're done recording, there's all kinds of cool ways to live stream audio and video. But if you are, and I just always think about the person who gets tripped up and stops, right? If you're trying to make the choice between audio and video as a starting point, audio eliminates so many of the potential traps and
trips. Oh, I say
trips.
Start with audio. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, the other thing, too, as you're trying to basically craft your message, audio is much easier to edit, mm-hmm. right? So if you want – if you're talking about putting things on a personal blog and, you know, you have attention to detail and you want them to be polished and you don't want to make – you can really notice this. A lot of YouTubers just jump cut. Right, they just you can see all of these sort of disorienting jump cuts
but
in their videos.
There's a difference between good jump cuts and bad jump cuts.
There is a way to jump cut. Yep,
and you'll notice as well. Somebody who jump cuts a couple times in a vlog or a YouTube video, that tends to be fine. People don't notice.
Right.
If you're jump cutting every 10 seconds, it's annoying.
It's disorienting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So audio eliminates that problem. People can't see your cuts. And trust me, there's a lot of them, you know. So that's an easier way to start. I just think that a lot of people who are young, who are in high school, might be spending more time on YouTube than they are in the world of podcasting.
Oh, absolutely.
So don't feel like that's the only direction you could go. Definitely investigate podcasting.
Yeah.
All right. So anything else on the website piece? You guys used to, when you worked at Praxis, and Praxis is basically, I've described it as an overpass or a potential college overpass where people apply for this program in high school and they're paired up with companies based on their interests and they do a paid internship. And at the end of that internship, at the end of the Praxis program, which is also a lot of personal and professional training to support a career, they're offered a job with this company they've been interning for. Is that fair?
Yeah.
Description?
Praxis doesn't like to describe the work experience as an internship.
Okay.
It's a bit more work intensive than an internship. It's
sure.
almost like a trial period for the real job.
I like that.
Which a lot of internships aren't, mm-hmm. actually. But yeah, that's broad strokes how it works.
Okay. So one of the requirements in the Praxis program was each participant builds their own website, mm-hmm. this personal brand website. The other one that we touched on briefly, and maybe we could just go into a little more detail, contacting existing experts in an area of interest.
Yeah.
Have you created anything for people who are struggling with finding this area of interest? Like ambition can exist without purpose, mm-hmm. I think. So is there anything on your blog that I'd like to link to something? Because I know that's a common problem for young people who they want to do something, right? And they see how easy the means of expression are today to access, but it's a very difficult thing to pin down at that age.
I've got a workshop and a workbook I have on the website called Ambition Mapping that walks people through this. It starts with asking you, you know, what are the things you really hate and you want to avoid doing?
Right.
Right. These are the things you truly hate and that are like life-sucking. There's a difference between something that's hard and I don't particularly enjoy doing it, but it will get me to the ends that I want, mm-hmm. and things I despise doing, right? So what are those things that you despise doing? Then what are the broad strokes of the things that you think you enjoy? We don't stress out too much about that because people are actually really bad at knowing what they want.
Mm-hmm.
We're better at knowing what we don't want, but we're really bad at knowing what we do want.
Mm-hmm.
So we start with the process of elimination. We eliminate the vast majority of options. Then we narrow down a little bit further. And then you do a little bit of research. And then you come up with a handful of goals that you can set for yourself. And then you walk through this process we talked about at the beginning of the episode is like, in order to do that, first I must do this. And mm-hmm. in order to do this, first I must do this, right?
Right.
Until eventually you get an actionable step that you can work on. I found this pretty helpful for people who find that they're spinning their wheels. They find it difficult to find their specific focus. If you're young, though, I'd also just encourage people to follow your curiosity. Because when you're starting out, it doesn't matter if your website has content on 12 different topics.
Yeah.
I think mine did. As you get a little bit older and you really are using this as your primary career advancement tool, you're going to want to hone in on the topics that you mention in your positioning statement.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a bit more of our intermediate thing. Then when you get to the advanced level, you're going to be probably writing about the granulars of specific topics.
Right. And I think the ambition mapping thing is really helpful. And we did do two shows about this. I'll link those in the show notes as well, because it's really asking people to be conscious of interests. What I would encounter when I was tutoring the SAT, I would interview kids. You know, I have a big SAT class and I'd say, what's everybody going to school for? And I got the sense that they had been more often than not given a sort of buffet of careers and not asked to be, you know, really conscious of the things that they were personally interested in. So if we rewind back to when my mother was graduating from high school, they told her she could be a nurse, a teacher, or a secretary, right? So maybe when I was doing this work, you know, 7 or 8 years ago, this had expanded for most people to 100 choices, but none of it was really the reverse engineering from interest, or the building up from interest, I should say, towards a career. So offering people that at that age, I think, is really important. I mean, for me, you know, my interest or my desire was always communication, performance, broadcasting, but I had no idea how I would wind up doing it. You know, I thought I'd be doing sports on television or something. That was, but it was based on some kind of need or drive that was in me from a very early age, before high school even.
The thing I will say too is that the vast majority of successful people I've been able to work with, mm-hmm. and that was, you know, when I was working with the Praxis team, that was one of the best parts about my job, was I was in charge of business development. I got to meet a lot of successful entrepreneurs, a lot of investors, people like that. And I got to talk to them. And the vast majority that I've talked to, the overwhelming majority, would emphasize that they weren't doing what we would call in the investment world a top-down analysis
sure.
of their careers.
Right. Right
they
right.
weren't looking at like, well, the market cap for data scientists is this, so I'm going to pursue data science. It was more they would pursue their interests, and there was this almost this emergent order in their careers that would come from it. Before I came here, you know, I had a 10 o'clock phone call talking to someone who this was exactly what happened for him in his career. He said, you know, what I do in my career, it wasn't a choice. It was a path that chose me.
Okay.
And I see that really often. So if I were talking to, you know, 16, 17 year old Zach, and I told him, you know, like, oh, you know, follow your interests and your career will come from that, I would have said, okay, great buddy, but that's not actually something that I'm going to listen to. So if you find yourself skeptical of what you and I just said, my advice to you would be actually go talk to people
right.
who are happy and successful in their work, and they're growing in their work, and there's a ton of opportunity in front of them, and very few of them will tell you that it was something that they, you know, chose from this buffet of options.
Right,
it was
right.
more that they followed their interests and their career kind of emerged from that. Like, I had no idea that I'd be doing what I'm doing today.
No, I mean, I blazed this incredible path of failure through the education. I mean, that's what it looked like from the outside. And again, this is why your ambition mapping idea connected with me, even though I first encountered it at 40 years old. Identifying what I don't want, right? So I had like some kind of goal, like, oh, I'd like to be a college history professor. And then I said, okay, well, what's realistic? So I started to just kind of grind my way through, I was a teacher's aide, and then I was a lead teacher of this specialized special ed program. And then I taught history at a secondary school level. And then, you know, I moved on to tutoring, and then I started a tutoring company. And then I started this podcast, like all chasing the satisfaction of some kind of need. But what I learned at every step was what I didn't want. Like I've described it on the show in the past as learning my way out of jobs. You know, a year would go by in my career and I would have a new list of things that were really wearing me down or were unsatisfying about the job that I wanted to escape.
With ambition mapping, one of the things I encourage people to do is, you know, do it multiple times.
Indeed, yeah.
Like if you're 16, it's going to be pretty hard.
Yeah.
Like it's a sentence completion exercise based on the sentence stems that Nathaniel Brandon developed, right? And you've got a ton of great content on Nathaniel Brandon's Six Pillars of Self-Esteem and a lot of his stuff. So when you're first doing it, it's really not easy if you're like 16, 18, even 20 years old. But I've also given it to people who are like, I had someone find it through Google who was a successful entrepreneur, did not do particularly well in school. He recently sold his company. He's in his 50s and he's struggling to find his focus, right? And that's how he found it. He was Googling how to find your focus.
Mm-hmm.
And for him, you know, it's super easy for him to finish every sentence stem, both in the things
right,
he
right.
hates and
yeah.
in the things he enjoys. Because he just has more experience.
Exactly. Yeah, sure.
But so many people, especially the young people I'm talking to, they are under this constant pressure and this conveyor belt to get them to the next level of the game that they never stop and ask, like, what am I trying to achieve from the game, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this is one way that you can take a step back and you can ask yourself, well, what are you actually trying to achieve from the game? If it's that you want to just win the game of school, go be an academic. Like, a lot of people – That's what the game of school is designed to do.
Yeah.
It's an apprenticeship system for academics.
Yeah.
And if that's really what you want to do, great. Go do it. Sincerely, right? But a lot of ambitious young people who are good at school, that's not actually what they want to do. And they very rarely have the opportunity to take a step back and ask themselves, well, what am I actually trying to approach here?
Right.
And if you don't know what you're trying to approach, you know, there are a number of different ways that you can find that out. my general advice for people is, like, you're 18 years old, probably get into the best college you can get into and get scholarships, and then defer your acceptance and then go work for a year. And then you'll find out in that year whether or not it's going to make the most sense for you to go to college. And then every year you have the choice to finish.
Yeah.
Or you might find out, I actually don't want to go and I'm going to go do something else. Right?
Right.
So there's a lot of lot more options in front of people than they think. A lot of people think, what I need to do is I just need to get through, and then I'll worry about my career when I'm like 23. The personal brand, the personal website, the reaching out to people who could be potential mentors, advisors, and teachers. These are all steps that you want to be taking along the way to give yourself those options.
Right. And those people that you're reaching out to in the future can open more doors for you. Mm-hmm. Like, once you've kind of proven yourself.
Yeah.
You're talking about a kind of continuous process here. So the process comes down to finding something you want to learn about, number one, connecting with people who know more than you, building some kind of evidence of your interest in the subject, then connecting with people who know more than you again, signaling your knowledge, learning more, and connecting again. Right.
And as you become more experienced, that signaling your knowledge needs to change from your interest to your experience.
Yeah, it's a climb. Right? It's very much a climb.
People, they stress out and they shit on personal branding, because – there are a lot of people out there who they're trying to brand themselves for something they have no experience in, and they have no reason to be able to talk about. Those are not the people I want to talk to, and those are not the people who I think benefit from actually building out something like this. As you develop that interest and you turn that interest into experience, that is the thing that you want to signal.
Right. Right. And that's just a one step after the other kind of thing. And then you're always looking, though, to come back and make new connections at a new level.
And this is something you can do throughout your entire career.
Exactly. Right? Exactly.
And something I didn't quite talk about in that blog post, because it's a little bit harder to do when you're like 16, 17 years old and you're in school, is the actually going out and those people that you're connecting with, working for them, right? Leveraging your low opportunity cost, right?
Sure.
Because this is what we were talking about at the beginning. You or I, when we were like in high school, the work that we were doing at 16, that was actually kind of exciting work. But if you're doing it at 22, 23, it's kind of annoying, partially because you believe your opportunity cost is higher. Your time is worth more.
Right.
But when you're really, really young, you understand that your time isn't worth much. So if somebody, if a young person, if a competent, conscientious, and interested young person approaches somebody who is more experienced, knowledgeable, and busy than they are, that person has a ton of different work that they can give this younger person to work on, right?
Yep.
And then working on that work and doing well at it, even if it's very simple work, can become that evidence that you need to signal your experience and competence for the next level of the game, right?
Right.
And then you do it again, right? And your work becomes increasingly complex and increasingly sophisticated. But there will always be somebody who's at that next level above you,
right,
that you can learn
from.
That
you can access. And your passion and persistence is kind of being, for this thing, whatever it is in this pursuit, is being tested at every single one of those levels. So you always have time to reevaluate. You completely changed directions from what you wanted to do. Where you said constitutional law, right? Yeah. That was your goal.
Yeah. I went to the University of Pennsylvania specifically because there was a program there called Philosophy, Politics, and Economics.
Yep.
PPE, which was, for all intents and purposes, essentially a pre-law kind of program or a pre-PhD kind of program. And while I was there, I figured out, like, I actually don't like poli-sci. I think it's like watered down philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
Economics at Penn is full of a bunch of people who couldn't get into Wharton, the business school. So
sure.
It was like essentially pre-finance, and I didn't want to do that. Really enjoyed philosophy. So then I thought, oh, well, maybe I'll become a philosophy professor.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't end up doing that. And I ended up actually going and working with Praxis for a couple years, then doing a little bit of the freelance coaching and consulting that I do now, and then getting hooked up with some of the organizations that I work with now as well in kind of like a almost a venture capital context. But I'm still a teacher. Like, the weird thing is I actually ended up like in constitutional law. To the extent I wanted to do constitutional law, I wanted to be a professor.
Yeah.
And I'm in a weird way, I'm doing nothing similar to what I was originally doing, but I'm actually doing something very similar.
You're still satisfying what is kind of an underlying need, which is what I was speaking to about what I've made. It's nice, isn't it?
Yeah, it's cool.
It's very nice.
I was speaking with another podcast host the other day where we were walking through this, and I told him, like, I'm not doing anything related to what I originally thought I'd be doing. It's like, but you are.
Yeah.
You actually are. The subject matter has just changed, and the institution in which you're teaching it has changed. But it's still pursuing that similar, like, meta interest of sorts.
Right. Yeah. I mean, if I'm on an elevator with somebody and we're riding from the first floor to the second floor and they say, what do you do? I say, I used to be a teacher and now I do online education. There you go.
Yeah. Right? I mean, that's accurate.
Yeah.
And to your point, the cool thing is, you know, the versatility of this portfolio of work that you build when you're young is almost infinite, right?
Yeah. Like, yeah.
If I wanted to go become a software engineer, the work and the experience I'd built up, you know, actually first learning a lot from Josh Blackman mm-hmm. and then from other people would have still been versatile, because the thing at the end of the day is not the specific set of experiences. It is the signaling that that experience brings with it. So everything you do in a work context, whether that's get a certain credential, pursue a certain kind of education, gain a certain type of work experience, get a reference from a specific kind of person, has what's called signaling power.
Yes.
And for you economics nerds out there, you'd be familiar with this. This is the signaling theory of education, right? And what it signals changes depending on, you know, what exactly the experience is, who exactly the person is, you have the reference from, all these kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
But you want to signal certain traits depending on what you want to achieve, right?
Mm-hmm.
What might be a positive signal in one context could be a negative signal in another context.
Right.
Really great example of this is, and Brian Kaplan talks about this in his book, The Case Against Education, is conformity.
Which is what the primary signal of a college degree would
yes.
be.
Yes. Yeah. I think he calls this like the sheepskin effect.
So it's good for the corporate job, probably.
It's good for, to be entirely honest, it's good for the vast majority of jobs, like traditional employment jobs.
You will go along.
Yep.
Yep.
Yep. Like if I'm an employer, if I'm an HR manager even, like, because at a lot of companies, the CEO is not doing the hiring. Right.
Right.
If I'm the hiring manager, I don't want to hire people who are going to be unpredictable, are going to be costly, and are going to turn over.
You want team player.
I want a team player. Someone who is – yeah, team player is definitely the jargon that, right. in the HR world. And really what they're saying when they say that is I want a conformist.
Yeah.
And like there are other contexts where conformity is actually a negative signal, right? So I've been fortunate this past year to start working in a venture capital context, largely in a marketing and portfolio support role with a venture capital firm that – primarily invests in companies started by people who dropped out of college, grad school, or just went a totally different kind of path, right? Mm-hmm. And in a venture capital context, nonconformity, right, not being a conformist, it can be a positive signal because, you know, the vast majority of venture-backed companies fail, and you expect that like 1 in 20 might – become a decent investment, right?
Right.
Probably like 1 in 50 or 1 in 100 becomes a $1 billion investment. So you are by definition looking for things that buck trends.
Yeah.
That's an entirely different kind of world. Like a venture capital portfolio is a very different kind of world from, say, like a retirement portfolio.
And I think it's also like you're looking for people who can operate outside of the traditional lines mm-hmm. too because of that instability and uncertainty in right. that world.
Yeah, I sure. mean, Nassim Taleb calls this being anti-fragile.
Right, right? Exactly.
You certain types of jobs, certain types of biological systems, certain types of economic systems, certain environments benefit from disorder,
mm-hmm.
right? Certain people benefit from disorder. If you're trying to find somebody who can build that thing that really like bucks trends, you probably want that.
Exactly.
But if you're an HR manager who wants somebody who's going to like do their job and they're going
right,
to
right,
climb up the bureaucratic ladder,
yep.
you don't want that.
Right.
So my advice to people is like, this is one of the reasons why I tell people like before you invest a large sum of your time and money into any particular path, get some idea of what you want to do, because you might find what you do want to signal is conformity. Now, if you're listening to this show, probably not. You know,
yep.
conformity is probably not what you want to signal. So then you want to find certain experiences and portfolio projects and references that can help you signal the values that are important
sure.
for what you want to achieve.
We probably have a lot of home educating teens listening to this as well, who are, you know, already signaling lots of nonconformity. And the signals that you're already sending, do you think that's a good guide for maybe where you should be looking in the professional world? Like if you've already accumulated signals that are going out,
and
does that help you maybe refocus your attention in certain directions? Like so let's just use a more extreme example. I'm pretty trackable on the internet, right? My options going forward are limited as a result of that. You know, like I'm pointed in a direction. So
there's a path dependency.
Exactly. So if somebody already has an abundance of signals, like let's say they're a little older than high school, early 20s, and they've been doing something like this. If they're already signaling something, do you offer any guidance for how they can point themselves towards, you know, new goal or an ambition?
The opportunities that are in front of you right now that are accessible, most accessible to you right now, are going to be a function of what you're currently signaling.
Exactly.
Right. Now, whether you want to pursue that or not is a personal choice, mm-hmm. right? Some people, like, they've purposely crafted, maybe they probably don't think of it in this way, but they've purposely crafted what they are signaling, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, if you were home educated, you chose to do that, then you chose to buck the trend of, like, going to college, and then you decided to, like, work for an early stage startup. Those are all things that signal to me that you are somebody who is probably a nonconformist of certain types, mm-hmm. And that you are not – you probably don't value stability that highly right now.
Right.
Now, some things do change in your life, so you might want to refocus those signals. Are you asking me how do you refocus your signals?
Yeah, I think that's the important – or kind of realizing like what signals you're sending and how to take advantage of signals that are already out there.
Yeah, I mean there are different ways you can test what you're currently signaling. Signaling is a bit of an abstract concept, so it isn't like you can go into like a certain online tool and plug in like what am I signaling, and it'll tell you like you're signaling conformity and conscientiousness and
right.
openness and extroversion, right? The first thing you want to do is you do want to at least get a sense of this through a personal brand audit.
Sure.
And there are two ways you do this. The first is your digital brand, which is, as you mentioned, like you search online. I can find a lot of stuff about Breath and Not. It's going to be the overwhelming part of your personal brand. The way you do your personal brand audit, your digital brand audit, is you open up a private window on Google Chrome, Brave, Safari, whatever it is, and you search your name on Google.
Right.
And then you see what like the first two pages of results are. That's going to give you an idea of what other people are seeing as far as your personal brand goes.
Mm-hmm.
And that will give you a loose idea of like what you're currently signaling.
Yep.
The other thing you can do is you can ask an acquaintance in the real world what they think of when they hear your name. And like people will probably lie to a certain extent, but they'll give you an idea of like what the labels are that come onto you. Now, if you don't like what you see and you're like, wow, you know, this isn't how I would describe myself or how I want to be described. Some of the things you can do is you can essentially leverage what the experience you have now to get slightly different kind of experience,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So like I said, the early, you know, like legal clerk intern experience I had, which ended up being essentially nothing because I didn't have like the clearance to be able to do work at a federal courthouse.
Sure, yeah.
But I was able to pick up other work that Josh had. Like that still signals certain traits, like probably conscientiousness, that I'm able to parlay into a slightly different kind of work, right?
Right, yeah.
That maybe emphasizes conscientiousness a little bit less. Maybe I don't want to signal conscientiousness.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of a context where you wouldn't want to signal that, but maybe I don't want to signal that, right? Mm-hmm. And then I can take that experience and I can leverage that into a slightly different kind of experience, right? It's very incremental. So we're speaking a lot in abstracts here, so I apologize. I'm not giving you like
– No, I was just curious because I think there's a lot of people who sort of fit that sort of non-traditional – like you mentioned in listening to this podcast. So it is a kind of a frustrating thing to have started to signal something, you know, online – and then you sort of lose control of how you look to other people. Like, how do I explain myself?
Okay, that's slightly different than what I was thinking you were asking. So I apologize.
No problem.
If you're worried about what you might be signaling right now, my first piece of advice is you're probably thinking too much about it.
Mm-hmm.
Most people, if they're not consciously going out and building this personal and professional brand,
yeah,
the traits that they're signaling through that brand are, you know, pretty debatable.
Yep.
And things that can be crafted pretty easily, right? Mm-hmm. So the difficult case, and it's not a case that's impossible to solve, but the more difficult case is one where it's like somebody has very consciously been signaling for a specific career track in their personal brand. They want to change it.
Mm-hmm.
That's just going to take a little bit more time. You're going to have to accrue a different set of experiences, and you're going to have to like reach out to slightly different kinds of people.
Sure.
But for most people, you know, it's like, oh, maybe I'm signaling the wrong thing and I don't want to be signaling it. It's like, eh, you're probably not, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're not consciously going out and you're building that positioning statement, you're building that work portfolio, you're building that blog, that content portfolio, you can do those things pretty quickly, and that will reconfigure the signal that you want to send. So, like maybe you're sending nonconformity, mm-hmm, as a signal. Mm-hmm. You don't want to signal that, right?
Yeah.
then what I would encourage you to do is go accrue experience or credentials that signal conformity.
Right. Right.
Like maybe you don't want to be a nonconformist and you don't want people to think you're a nonconformist. You know, one of the best things you can do is you can just go get a college degree.
So, okay. So that's the answer to the question that I still wasn't sure how to ask right until now, which we could just describe as signal correction, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Is it possible? Signal correction and readjustment is something that is possible. So like I've accumulated 9 or 10 years of information about me online. So for me at this point, making myself look like a conformist is a huge project that's going to require millions of dollars, right? Tough luck for me. But if you're 21 and you've had a YouTube channel that you're not proud of, or you've had a social media presence that's questionable, those things are much easier to correct.
Yeah. So one of the things I like to tell young people is, you know, you've probably heard a teacher of yours tell you like, oh, be careful what you post on the internet because it's going to follow you.
Permanent record.
Yeah. And they're both wrong and they're right. Right.
Mm, yeah.
They're wrong in the case that like really most people really don't care what you post on social media. Right?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Unless you choose to become the object of an internet outrage mob, like most people aren't going to go searching for that.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So don't worry too much about that. If you want to correct what you are signaling, though, like get a conscious idea of what you want from your career, what kind of job you want, who you want to learn from, you know, what kind of benefits you want in your job.
Mm-hmm.
Again, do that kind of reverse induction, that backward induction, that reverse engineering, and ask yourself, what am I currently not signaling that would be beneficial for me to signal here?
Gotcha.
And then just go pursue that. Like, just get a level of mindfulness about this that most people don't have.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So let's leave it there for today. We provided lots of information in an hour and a half. And the summary is basically start by learning, right? Start by something that you're passionate about, you're excited about, and learning. And then to confirm that you're learning about the right things in pursuit of those passions, pursuit of those interests, pursuit of those needs, start making connections with people who know more than you.
Yep.
Right?
And the content that you produce is a way for you to create those connections. So
right.
An example from my own experience, right? I went to a fee seminar when I was in high school, came home, wrote a letter to the editor, about, you know, some big unfinished highway project that was in my hometown, mm-hmm. right? And like I look back at the letter now and it's not particularly well written, but I was also like 15. So
yeah.
I'm not too concerned about it. I cited a number of people in that article that probably had Google alerts for their own name. Mm-hmm. They emailed me. One of those people was Walter Block at Loyola New Orleans.
Yep.
Walter Block emails me. He's so excited to see that, you know, like some high schooler is writing about privatizing highways.
Sure, yeah.
And he sees that I'm in Pennsylvania and he says, oh, well, you know, you should get hooked up with the Institute for Humane Studies. They're doing a seminar at Duquesne University in Pittsburgh, which is a couple hours from where you live. You should go there. And he sends me the link. I click on the link. I register for the seminar. I come to Pittsburgh. I meet Anthony Davies, who's
yes.
a professor at Duquesne University.
Right.
And through that, I ended up meeting a ton of other people who, again, a lot of them were just interested. It's like, oh, you know, you're like 16 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Why are you interested in this stuff, right? And all because I wrote that one piece of content, right? It eventually got published on the Mises blog. That's how I met Jeffrey Tucker,
mm-hmm. right?
Jeffrey introduced me to a couple other people. Just put that content out there. Pursue your interests. Start producing content on it, and those interests will end up guiding you to a smaller field of interest. Now, when you want to start thinking about, do I want to build a business around this? Do you want to get to like the more intermediate and advanced levels of that? You know, you want to be a little bit more conscious of it, but
right.
you want to start eliminating the vast majority of options out there by pursuing the things that you are actually interested in.
Awesome. Where can people learn more about your work?
ZachSlayback.com, ZakSlaybacK.com.
This is certainly something we could manage once a month, I would think, or every other month.
It's an 8-minute walk from my house, so
yeah. Make coffee, sit at the table here, and you know, I your website is such a valuable resource that I wish existed, you know, in its current form for kids 5 years ago when I was doing this kind of work.
I wish it existed in its current form 5 years ago.
8 years ago when, you know, you might have benefited from it a little bit more, and all the way back to, what was it, 20 years ago when I would have benefited from it. For somebody like me who was just put on a set of tracks, and how discouraged I was when I was doing the college consulting and the tutoring and, you know, like helping kids get into the top tier schools, that was the function of my business, that so many of them, I was just a whisper saying something different in a world where everybody was still giving the same bad information that I had received 1995. That was an extremely discouraging part of my career. So I just think it's so helpful what you're doing. And I want all of everybody who needs it in this audience to know about it and spread the word about it, please, because you know somebody else who needs it as well.
Yeah, I encourage you, if anything I've said today interests you, I write a lot on career success in general. Now, part of my audience is young people in high school, but a lot of the people I work directly with, either through some of my own informational products or they're on my email list, are, you know, like I said, I had a gentleman reach out to me who's in his 50s. Mm-hmm. I also write a lot for adults who are finally realizing they're like, I went and I got that job that I was supposed to get, and I'm either miserable or I want to do something different, and I don't know how to do something different.
Right.
I've got email scripts on the website. You know, that's a big part of it. A lot of people, they don't reach out because they don't know what they're going to say.
Yep.
So I put together a bunch of email scripts. It's like, here, you don't know what you want to say if you're going to reach out to somebody?
Per this situation.
Yeah.
Right.
Here's the exact email script you want to use. So go download those and reach out to me.
Should we just mention how hilarious it was that I used one of your email scripts to invite you on the show?
Yeah, that was kind of weird. I should say, when I'm talking about cold emails, I mean cold emails. You've never met this person before. Yeah, Brett sent me a message on Facebook Messenger that was one of my own email scripts to invite me on his podcast. And I just looked at it and I'm like...
I laughed all through the copying and pasting.
I'm sure you thought it was so funny. I was uncomfortable.